is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal land with the full story.
Are you guys getting in?
Come over here, follow me.
At a detention camp in Syria, a group of 34 women and children, all Australian citizens, load into cars. They are the wives, widows and children of dead or jailed Islamic State fighters. And they're headed towards Damascus, where it's expected from there they'll return to Australia. But the attempt fails, in part because the Australian government wants no part in their return.
Well, we won't repatriate them. My mother would have said, if you make your bed, you lie in it. These are people who went overseas supporting Islamic State.
And the febrile atmosphere might have something to do with it.
Some of these adults do pose a risk. I think it's very important to remember that while these people are called ISIS brides, you know, colloquially in the media, actually they are members of ISIS.
You know, you say, oh, well, there's good Muslims out there. Well, I'm sorry. How can you tell me there are good Muslims?
Today, senior reporter and former foreign correspondent Ben Doherty on the politics in the way and why it's time to bring them home.
These people are Australian citizens. Do you want these children coming back to Australia as four-year-olds, as seven-year-olds who've had a really difficult start to their life, a really, really difficult and dangerous beginning to their life? Or do you want them coming back as radicalised teenagers at 17, 18, 21?
It's Thursday, the 19th of February. Hi, Ben. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Regid.
Ben, each time there are reports of Australians in Syria and in camps they're trying to return, it triggers a really heated debate. But the pitch is a little higher this time.
I think this is happening at a very acute time in Australian politics. I have to say, the sort of shameless opportunism and the shallowness of Australian politics, even the sort of naked racism of our political debate, has been pretty galling this week. Australia is abandoning its citizens in this part of the world, and I appreciate these are complex cases and there are security issues to talk about, but these are Australian citizens. They have a right to return to this country. I think a Prime Minister saying, you've made your bed, now lie in it, is frankly pretty galling. Most of this group is children. Most of them are very young. Some of them were born in those camps. So how is it that they've made their beds? But I think you're right. Every time this issue comes up, and this has been going on for six, nearly 7 years now, this issue of this cohort of Australians who've been caught in this situation, it does generate a very fierce political debate, but it's landed at a particularly acute time. And I think it's landed in the middle of that. We're having this debate around good migration versus bad migration, whatever that means and whatever the underlying impetus for that is. It's also landed in a post-Bondi Australia where these issues take on a kind of new ferocity, and this group has been at the forefront of that, and it's been a pretty ugly week.
What does it suggest when the Prime Minister said, you've made your bed, you've got to lie in it? Is that a shift from Anthony Albanese?
Well, it definitely is a shift. Look, it's this sort of Manichaean view of the world, dividing everybody into the deserving and the undeserving, as though somehow citizenship is somehow contingent and they're sort of less Australian. I appreciate they're in complex situations, and some of them went willingly to this place, some of them not, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But this is a shift, because this is the same government that has previously repatriated people from there. The Australian government went in and it got women and children from that camp, from Roj camp, and it brought them home and it reintegrated them, repatriated, and that reintegration's gone very well. So two Australian governments, the Morrison government and the Albanese government, have both conducted repatriations from this cohort, but they've left this other cohort. But the politics has changed now, and the Australian government's attitude has changed.
All right, we'll come back to some of that, but let's talk more about this group of 34 and how much we know about them. So what do we know about why these women ended up in Syria?
So this group are the wives and widows and the children of slain or jailed Islamic State fighters, and they are Australian citizens. Their children are Australian citizens. It's 34 people, most of them children, from 11 family groups. Now, we know the names of some. We know the background of some married men who wanted to fight for the Islamic State Caliphate. Some say they were tricked into going, that they went to Turkey, they went to Syria for humanitarian reasons, and then were tricked in going over the border or going into a place where they didn't want to be, that they got coerced into going. Others were radicalised in Australia and went willingly, wanted to be part of the Islamic State, the so-called caliphate. So I think it's hard to generalise about this whole group and saying they are all this. These are very complex cases. It is only a small number. The Australian government authorities know who each of these people are. They've all had biometric testing. They know exactly who everybody is. They know their backgrounds. They know their histories. They know the idiosyncrasies of all of their experiences. But a lot of them have said repeatedly, and their families will talk about this, that these people, these women went, they were either tricked, they were coerced, they were sort of manipulated into going. Some, yes, definitely did go willingly, but not all. And I think the argument around you've made your bed just falls away completely when you look at children, children who are born in these camps in really difficult and dangerous and radicalising situations. How is it a child's fault that they found themselves caught in these awful, awful places?
And making it more acute, the conditions in the camps themselves are not great.
Absolutely dreadful. Dysentery, influenza outbreaks are common. They spread very quickly across populations that live in close quarters, still living in tents after 6-7 years. Winters are incredibly cold. Everything freezes. The latrines back up. Summers are very, very hot, very dangerous. So disease outbreak, we've had children, Australian children developing frostbite. Children have died in that camp. Food and running water often run low. Heating fuel often runs low. These are very difficult circumstance to live in, but they're also dangerous. The US, which basically funds the Kurdish forces that runs the camp, talk about these places being very, very dangerous. Incubators for radicalisation is what they say. And they basically say that every day that people are left in those camps is a danger, not just to those people in the camps, but to everybody else. The US is trying to push its allies. It's trying to push Australia and other countries to take its citizens back to repatriate them. It wants to close the camps. These are unsafe places for the people in them. They are unsafe places for everybody else in the world. They want them closed. And Australia is laggard, essentially. Australia only has a small number of people, but has been laggard in bringing its citizens home.
So this group of 34 did try and leave, and they were headed to Damascus. Why did they pick that route?
You're right. It's a long way across Syria, and it's a difficult place. I mean, basically, they are essentially trying to cross what was very recently a front line of a conflict. This is a very difficult and dangerous journey. The previous repatriations that the government has conducted have been much easier, much safer. Al-Hol and Rojh camps are the two big camps, are up in that sort of northeastern corner of Syria. Because these women and children are trying to find their own way out, the Australian government has now washed its hands of its citizens, says, we're not helping you, we're not giving you any assistance. They've got to find their own way, and the way to do that is to get to Damascus, to get travel documents and get out that way. It's much more dangerous, it's much more fraught, and that's exactly what we've seen in that they have tried to get to Damascus. They've got sort of 50 Ks down the road, and they've been turned around. You don't have permissions to be in here. You don't have permissions to cross over to this side, essentially. And they've had to turn around and go back to Rojh. Now, the way it's being cast to me from family members and others is that this is a postponement, not a cancellation, that they will try again, that they will negotiate what's needed to be negotiated. How long that takes, who knows?
But part of the messiness is because the Australian government has not assisted.
Exactly right. People who work in this part of the world will tell you this is a bad outcome. This is not the way this should be done, that governments have previously, including the Australian government, taken control of these repatriations, have managed the process all the way so they know where people are, and where they're going and when they land, rather than people just turning up, because that's happened before as well. In October last year, two women and four children escaped the camp, got out, got themselves all the way to Beirut and got themselves home that way. Now, that was done without any support, without any intervention, without any security controls around them. A much better way for everybody, a much safer way for everybody, is to bring people home in a controlled manner.
The government and other people commenting on this are talking about something called temporary exclusion orders. Mm. So what is that, and could that come into place?
Look, we don't see these temporary exclusion orders very often. They are used to prevent Australian citizens who are directly linked to terrorism from returning to Australia unless they get a permit. It's a kind of control mechanism. But you can't issue it to anybody under 14, which is most of this group. So, yes, there's a lot of political discussion about that. It might be used in some cases for some of these women. There might be control orders placed on them if and when they return to Australia. Again, Australia has repatriated people from this group before. One woman, Mariam Raad, faced charges of entering a prescribed area, going into the Raqqa province of Syria. She was charged. She went through the courts. She pleaded guilty. she was given essentially a good behaviour bond. So there is a system in place for this. Australia has the mechanisms, has the expertise to manage this reintegration. And if you talk to people who have been involved in this, the reintegrations that have been done, going back to 2019 when 8 orphan children were brought back, they've worked very, very well. Kids going back to school and reintegrating, women reintegrating back into their community. So this is not impossible. This can be done and has been done. But it's going to be done with this group in a much more chaotic manner because the government has essentially wiped its hands of its citizens here.
Ben, let's come back to some of that politics. The Liberal Party, other commentators are saying it's a safety issue, bringing people back when they might present a risk to Australia. But it begs the question, if some of this group have committed wrongdoing, why not bring them back and charge them and have due process carried out?
I think that's exactly right. And there absolutely is a security issue to talk about here. And there should be all of those measures that the government has, and it has significant powers in this area, to manage and to minimise the risk to the Australian population. Again, the group is not a homogenous cohort. People went in different circumstances and for different reasons, and they will be treated individually. None of the group has been charged at this point with a crime anywhere in the world, but there is the potential for those charges to be brought, as we've seen previously, if they come back to Australia. But there's no legal process that they're going through now. So this is a way to see that people are held accountable if they've committed crimes, to bring them back to Australia and to hold them to account. There's also the argument about when people come back. These people are Australian citizens. At some point, these camps are going to close. They are going to find their way back to Australia. Do you want these children coming back to Australia as 4-year-olds, as 7-year-olds who've had a really difficult start to their life, a really, really difficult and dangerous beginning to their life? Or do you want them coming back as radicalised teenagers at 17, 18, 21? All of the security experts in this space, including the US government, which is really leaning on Australia to get its citizens out, is saying the longer you leave people in this situation, the more dangerous it is for them, the more dangerous it is for you. You are creating a security issue that you claim to be trying to counter. This is incredibly counterproductive to leave people in this dangerous situation.
We'll be right back. Let's come back to some of the political climate. You mentioned earlier this is happening after the Bondi massacre committed by two people allegedly because of Islamic State beliefs. If the government is operating in that environment, does it mean that they really don't have political space to return this group of women and children?
I think that's right. I think it is a very difficult issue. The timing is, as we say, sort of acute right now in the aftermath of Bondi, these IS-inspired gunmen and these anti-Semitic attacks. There is a febrile debate around migration and what it looks like for Australia at the moment, and that's got a lot to do with domestic politics as well. There is a narrow space for the government to be doing this, but governments also have obligations to their citizens. It's not a one-way street. These are Australian citizens. They have a right to return.
You just said the government has obligations, which is really interesting. That discussion around if the government doesn't fulfil its obligations to its citizens, are they effectively rendering them stateless? It means the Australian citizenship just doesn't carry any weight anymore.
I think that's a really valid point. What is it to be an Australian citizen? If you become an uncomfortable citizen politically for your government, then do they just discard you? Do they just abandon you? I think legally citizenship means more than that, and I think politically citizenship needs to mean more than that.
Because I think here of the Shamima Begum example, she left the UK at 15 years of age and the UK stripped her of British citizenship. Do you get the sense that we could go that far in this debate?
Well, I think we've tried to. The Begum case is fascinating. This is a girl who was born, raised and radicalised in Bethnal Green, I think, in the UK, and goes to fight and then is sort of foisted onto another country, foisted onto Bangladesh, a place she barely has connection to, as though, oh, this person is not our responsibility anymore. Australia's tried to do the exact same thing with Neil Prakash and said, you have the right to take citizenship in Fiji, a country he'd never been to. And Fiji said, he's not a citizen of ours, he's an Australian. And so this idea that powerful countries will try to sort of shed uncomfortable citizens they don't like to foist them onto other countries that are almost certainly less well equipped to manage difficult citizens, people who are security concerns, doesn't make the world a safer place. It's the fundamental basis of citizenship that it is permanent and it's not conditional. It's not contingent on you being a citizen that the government likes. Citizenship belongs to everybody, and you start eroding it and you start making it conditional, then everybody's citizenship is weakened.
That's an interesting point you've made, because obviously Syria is a war-torn country and it isn't necessarily equipped to handle this cohort of people. You've mentioned they're probably going to try and come back again. Mm. Where do you see that going in terms of Australia's involvement? Will the government be forced to help, or could we see a scenario where they just can't ever come back?
I don't think that's likely. I think ultimately it feels like the current issue that they're stuck in Raj camp is more a logistical, bureaucratic one. They will work out a way. There are lots of people working behind the scenes, people connected to the families who are trying to engineer this, smooth this path so they can get their way. But basically, the government said, we're not going to help you get back, but they can't really stand in their way. If an Australian citizen presents to an Australian embassy anywhere in the world, says, I need travel documents, I need a passport, the Australian government has a legal obligation to give that to them. So in that way, they will find their way back to Australia. I think the argument is, well, how do we want these people to come back to Australia? What are the circumstances and what are the protections around those people for their safety and for everybody else's safety? To make this repatriation work as well for everybody, I think needs more government intervention, not less. Now, basically, the government is saying we're going to do the bare minimum. We'll do what we're legally obliged to do. We'll give people passports or travel documents when they need to, but we're not giving you any help. I think everybody recognises that that's a bad solution, but that's where we are.
Ben, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Regid.
That was senior reporter and former foreign correspondent Ben Doherty. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria and Joe Koning. Sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. And the executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.